The Brant and Sherry Oddcast, sponsored by Fellowship Home Loans. To find out more about the radio show or to order Brant's new book, The Truth About Us, go to BrantHanson.com.
So what you are about to hear, by the way, thanks for listening, is the second part of an interview. We decided to do a couple podcasts out of an interview that I did at a church. This is Hammock Street Church, Boca Raton, Florida. They had me in. And the pastor, again, former lawyer, Russell Silverglate, great guy. Mm-hmm. He wanted to interview me about the truth about us.
They were doing something with it, right?
Yeah, they're doing a sermon series.
Yeah.
Which is cool. I see some of that, like mm-hmm. with Unoffendable and mm-hmm. Blessed Are the Misfits and in this latest book, which is always really neat. Sometimes I listen in mm-hmm. and it's really cool to listen to somebody else explain the ideas in their own way.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I wish I would have said it that way sometimes.
That's awesome.
Anyway, it's really cool. So they thought, well, you know, he's close enough, he can come. So I did that. Anyway, this is the second half of this. Thanks for listening. We know this isn't the normal podcast format, but we're going to change it up just a little bit because we're doing a lot of traveling, so we can't keep pumping out the radio show like normal. Mm-hmm. So we thought we would have something rather than nothing. But I do hope you like it.
So why weren't the Beatles right? Why isn't it All We Need Is Love?
Yeah, I wish they were right. They couldn't even get along. And I think it's so interesting. Like, the Beatles broke up because they were screaming at each other.
All they needed was love, though.
Yeah, all you need is, hey, give peace a chance, guys. Come on. The truth is, we need more than that. We need more than what they considered love. We need more than good feelings. We need help to overcome ourselves. And look, human nature, the first two, in a biblical story, they have two boys and one kills the other one. Like, there weren't even like bows and arrows or what is he finds a rock to do it.
Right.
Like, that's humanity. The earliest cave drawings. This is before you can blame capitalism or nationalism or socialism or any ism you want. Well, that's the real problem with, you know, the humans. It's not humans. No, the first cave drawings, pre-nations, pre-agriculture, pre-personal private property, are people killing each other.
Right.
The drawings are of people killing each other. This is what we do. There's a human problem. So being able to acknowledge that, I think, and then see it in myself is very healthy.
So, I agree with you with that. How do you, though, avoid the appearance of hypocrisy? You quoted Steve Brown, Steve, who is a professor at Reformed Seminary and a preacher and all that, greatest radio voice, second to you, of course. But you know, he says when you write, it's hard to write a book about self-righteousness without being self-righteous.
Totally.
And so, are you self-righteous? Do you consider yourself self-righteous?
Yeah, I am. By my very nature, I'm the center of my universe. I really am. I'm getting better, but it's just true. Like, if I look, just think of your own perspective. You stick your arm out and rotate. Well, what's in the middle? It's always me.
Yeah.
By my nature. And I think it's so interesting about Jesus too, because we're always about, well, I need to love myself first. And that's like, you already do. You already do. And Jesus takes that as a given. He's like, now love your neighbor as you love yourself. I've described it this way too. Now, I don't like myself very much a lot. I mean, that is true.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I just have, I've always struggled with bad self-esteem, blah, 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 blah.
Does anyone not?
No, I think everybody struggles with that.
Okay.
Everybody. I'm not special that way at all. But to say I don't love me. No, I do. If I were given, or you, if you were given care of a person, this is the analogy I use. Let's say I had to brush this guy's teeth. I had to take care of all of his bathroom duties. I had to make sure, help him with a shower every day. I had to make sure he had food for the day. I had to make sure, I paid for his car. I paid for his shelter. Like, I love that guy. Well, that's me. I mean, you do this for yourself. Now, can I worry about my neighbor having shelter? Can I worry about my neighbor, can she get to work? She's a single mom. Can I care? Like, that's what Jesus is asking us to do. It's a given. I love me, and I'm the center of my universe. So, yeah, I do struggle with self-righteousness. Thank the Lord. I can admit that. And then hopefully grow and become a kind of person that doesn't even have to think about it that much and can just start thinking about other people.
But it doesn't go away, right?
No,
I mean, you always have this self-righteous streak running people.
It's a struggle. It's a struggle. It's like the Alcoholics Anonymous thing again. It's like,
you have to admit every time before you start talking, this is who I am.
Right.
It's funny, you just made me think, it's funny that we have pets, right? We have a dog, you have a dog, and you feed that dog, you clean up after its business, you make sure it has shelter, you take it to the vet, and all of a sudden you have this deep, abiding affection for this animal that lives in your house,
yes.
This wolf. Yeah. Wolf relative that sleeps on the edge of the carpet.
Yeah.
Is that why, you think? Because you're showering so much love on this creature that...
Plus they're fuzzy.
You love it, and they're sure.
I think that's it. And that's why Jesus is telling us to bless those who curse us. Because it will turn our hearts towards them. As soon as you do it, if somebody is annoying to you in traffic, somebody cuts you off on 95 or the turnpike or wherever... if you have the wherewithal, the practice of mind, submitted, going, I'm going to do this because Jesus told me to do it. I'm going to pray for this person to have a successful day and that their family would be at peace.
Do you pray right there on the spot?
When I can, when I remember to, but it's, again, I'm trying to obey Jesus. But I'm telling you, your attitude towards that person will switch that fast. This is not a months-long process. It's as soon as we start blessing people that we start to change.
So we can all leave this morning and immediately start
working
on blessing people, giving them the benefit of the doubt, not judging, not considering, and all of a sudden we'll feel a change in ourselves?
Your heart will change towards the people that you're doing that for, and you will grow spiritually. And this is what Jesus actually told us to do. Go make disciples. That's what it means. We'll be a disciple. Let's follow Jesus. Okay, let's do the stuff he said to do. That's what he said to do.
So again, there are a lot of hard truths in the Bible, and a lot of the world out there says, we don't like your hard truths. We're not. We don't care for it. It means you're mean. It means you're hateful. You're not accepting. How do we convince people of that? How do we work on that? What is it that we can do to share that love with the world without sounding so self-righteous or so condescending?
I think if I like people, it helps.
How so? What do you mean by that?
Well, I can tell when I've made this switch. Like, again, I'm an introvert, and I'm not naturally. I look too intense. Like, my normal look is like my eyebrows down, you know, and because I have nystagmus, I have a neurological problem. I actually have to shake my head a lot to see straight. So I was at Panera yesterday, and the lady's like, "What's the matter?" Like the way
you wrote that in the book. You get asked what's the matter all the time.
Because whenever I have to focus, like to read or something, I'm doing this. So besides looking too intense and shaking my head, no, I'm very approachable.
Does wearing the mask help?
Yeah.
So.
But you know what I've started doing? Once I realized this, like God loves people and I don't have to control them. And I don't have to judge them. So my neighbors who are tisk, they have a different sexual ethic than I do. Tisk, you know, they... don't agree with what, instead of me feeling like I need to straighten them out, actually like them, they're open to me. I find that really fascinating.
That's radical.
Yeah, for me, because again, I can come across so intense, but they can sense that I like them. Like I'm for them. And now my neighbors are drawn to me. That's never happened before. So I think it's the dropping of all that, actually liking people. And the other thing is, too, about convincing other people, I'm not going to be able to convince everybody or even most people. That's God's business.
And that's okay.
I'm okay with that. Yeah. I have to be okay with it. Look, people walked away from Jesus unconvinced, and he let them. So I don't have to control people. That alone, like, I don't have to control. All I have to do is be who God has called me to be, and... interestingly enough, I've seen people's hearts turn toward me and towards Christ because I finally made that jump. Isn't that weird?
So you wrote a book called Unoffendable.
Yeah.
Which we've gone through. We did a series on it. And in fact, I actually brought a copy to the angriest Christian I know. And I handed it to him, and he was so offended. I wish I was making it up. I haven't seen him since. It's been a couple of years now. Because people love their, what do they call it? Their righteous indignation.
Right.
So how is it that we work with other believers to kind of move them off of that track toward righteous indignation?
Well, I think talking about it is huge. Like, people aren't taught out of it. It's a huge lie, this idea that my anger is righteous. Oh, really?
If I hear one more time, and we were talking about this before, you know, well, Jesus was angry.
Yeah,
he turned Jesus over the tables of the money changers.
Right, and so since you're as sinless as God, he's also entitled with vengeance. He's entitled to vengeance. He's entitled with judgment. There's all sorts of things that are God's province because he's set apart in a way that we are not sinless. This is why our anger is supposed to be gotten rid of before the sun goes down. The Bible's so consistent on human anger. But we love our anger because it makes us feel good about ourselves. Well, we really do. It's very. If you're trying to convince somebody to let go of their anger, it's for a lot of people, it's caught up in their identity. This is not an abdication from right and wrong. We know that there's right and wrong. We know there's injustice in the world. We're supposed to fight it. Actually do things. Sacrifice ourselves. Like, do things to set things right. To defend the weak. Defend the oppressed. To set free, you know, these people. Like, we're supposed to do that. But the idea that I'm entitled to this righteous anger, like your righteous anger is actually clouding your judgment and actually isn't accomplishing anything that you couldn't do better without it. So this is something, just talking about it like you have, I think is really important for Christians. And it's kind of a eureka moment to go, wait a second, I'm supposed to be different.
So that was unoffendable. Then you wrote a book about the misfits, which again, I loved it. It felt to me like it had a specific audience in mind for that, but now you wrote a book about self-righteousness. Did you learn anything when you finally hit the last keystroke or pen stroke, however you write books, that was there something that writing the book made you realize that you hadn't realized when you started? Like, did you learn from the writing process?
Yeah, I have. And I think anytime, I've had to tell people this too, because you can come off like, oh, Mr. Expert on whatever. No, I just had to think about it a lot. I'm not an expert.
How long did it take you to write?
Gosh, maybe 6 months of just every Saturday at Starbucks.
Okay.
And whenever you have to sit and write, just like you teach a class or something, you're the one learning. And it's an extended time of just thinking about this. And so it has been helpful to me. It's helpful to me to talk about it this morning. Again, revisit this. This is what the church is supposed to do. Like, we build each other up to go, how can we follow Jesus together? And then what does that look like? And let's go do it. And then let's talk about it later. Like, what was it like forgiving people this week that didn't deserve it?
So you think more churches would benefit, church leaders would benefit by having these discussions, by working our way through these issues, situations, kind of bring us this realization that, boy, we really are a self-righteous bunch.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it would. I think everybody should buy my book in large quantities and distribute them, perhaps airdropping them over a large area. Yeah, I do. I think this is so exciting to live a life like this, and you'll be so different. Who lives this way? What kind of weirdo lives in a way that's like, we're just going to forgive and we're going to bless those who curse us? Who in the world does that? Like, if we did that, people would be like, huh, this Jesus thing is really interesting.
How would you bring that, how would you sort of incorporate that into a follower of Jesus who just feels like they just have to be a part of what I think of as the commentariat?
Uh-huh.
You know, I cannot let this statement go on unnoted. I cannot let that action go on criticized. How do you teach a follower of Jesus to stop doing that? Or at least if they're going to do it, what do you tell them? How do you tell them to engage people if you insist on being a part of that process?
If you insist on it, I appreciate that people want to stand for true things, and so do I. I think it's the tenor of how you do it. I think understanding how you'll be perceived is really critical. So if I want to do something, I need to say it in a certain way. It's how you do it, right? And again, if it's just on a message, if it's just in a comment thread, can I be kind? Because people are taking public stands. That's the other reason that they'll go down with the ship if they have to.
Have you seen the ones that say, this is my belief, and if you don't like it, you can just unfriend me now? Have you seen that?
I don't. Yeah, I have seen that. I wouldn't use that as a template.
That's not the way to approach it, you're saying? No?
I wouldn't.
Okay.
I have very strong opinions about a number of issues. Very strong. But it's how I do it.
So have you received the comment that basically says, wait a minute, this feels all touchy-feely, lovey-dovey. You're watering down the gospel. You're just encouraging people to be libertine, which means just take all the liberties you want. God's totally okay with everything. Is that what you're talking about? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I have heard that before. Not much. If people, because honestly, be angry. Just be angry. Just stay angry. And, you know, there's that verse that says, be angry and don't sin. Everybody remembers that first part. The second part of the verse is, but let go of your anger before the sun goes down.
Right.
So you need to get rid of it today. Five verses later, get rid of all anger. The truth is, like, saying, oh, you should just stay angry, that's the easy thing. That's the libertine thing. That's the doesn't really matter thing. Do whatever you feel like. That's
being angry all the time.
Yeah, just, oh, yeah, sure. You're the perfect judge of what's righteous and what's not. You're not biased at all. I mean, it's just that you are appointed to judge people, and you know everybody else's hearts. You know their motivations. Like, yeah, if you want to think that, that's normal. That's everybody on Twitter, everybody on Facebook coming along and saying, actually, that's not the life that Jesus is calling us to. It's a lot harder than that. I'm not being, this is being anything but just being like touchy-feely, right? This is hard.
I always imagine, and maybe, I don't know if you do too, do you ever imagine Jesus coming back and saying, and looking at the church, what he would say? Like, what have you people done with my church?
I do, and like, okay, and I know this is touchy too, but people are like, I have said things that are a little bit critical about how we do things, for instance, and I'm in this. How we can do things as churches or as the church. I can be, and people are like, hey, you can't criticize church because Jesus never did that. He never, like, actually he does. Like, there's in Revelation, there's like letters that go out directly from Jesus, like blasting
certain churches like, for exactly. Doing this and that. I'll spit out, right?
I'm not sure. Like, but again, am I doing it charitably? Like, I've done it the wrong way in the past, and I'm trying to be more focused on who Jesus is and like how do we grow towards him rather than trying to win an argument.
You had brought up the elephant and the rider analogy. Could you unpack that a little bit? I thought that was a great analogy.
Sure. Jonathan Haidt is a guy at New York University who wrote about this. But we all think we're rational people, is what he was saying. We all like to think that. Like, I'm a rational person, and so I have these beliefs, and my emotions and intuitions follow those beliefs. That's how I live my life. I'm rational. And so we think, like, the elephant that a rider is on is our rationality, and it leads the rider. The rider can't really control the elephant that much, so, like, it's the one, the elephant is, we're rational, and the rider sitting on it is our emotions and our intuitions and stuff. He said we got it exactly wrong. Humans are not, by nature, hyper-rational. We're actually led by our emotions and intuitions, and we use our rationality to back up what we wanted to do. What we already wanted to do. So we marshal our forces, our intellectual forces, with justifying reasons for what we already wanted. So if I want, I've seen this happen in real time with adults, where they've got their emotions set on somebody's, you know, outside their marriage. And suddenly, all of their intellectual reasons go behind that. Well, this is how we do things. We rationalize. I do this when it comes to, like, buying a pair of shoes or a shirt or something. Like, well, I really don't want, hey, that's cool. Huh, I don't want to, I have a budget, but that's really cool. Like, why, well, you know, if I buy it this month, you know, we can worry about the budget next month, or like it's a really good sale. I come up with all these reasons in the moment to back up what I want.
I hate that you just said that. I literally yesterday installed a new thermostat in the house because the house has been warm, and I thought it's the thermostat, even though my wife, who's never wrong, was telling me what it was. I bought a new thermostat, I rationalized it, I put it in, all that stuff, and still we have to say it's exactly what you just said.
Well, okay, like the yeah. Typical way for us would be to still argue that it's a thermostat, even though it's wrong.
Oh yeah,
we know it, but really, so I still hope it's. I don't want my wife.
Oh, I
to be
do
right.
Want that with all my heart.
Right.
Yeah, it's not.
Right.
But I'm wrong.
People will go to their graves wrong and convincing themselves that they're right. In fact, that's what we do as humans.
Is we go to our graves wrong.
Wrong.
Yeah.
Instead of repenting. And Jesus said, like, just one of you, will do it. We'll party.
Let me begin to wind down just because I'm running out of time. But I wanted to get this in. So in chapter six, you opened up with a quote from Malcolm Muggeridge. I just like saying his name. So, and I assume you do too, because you wrote it. The depravity of man is at once the most empirically verifiable reality, but at the same time, it's the most intellectually resisted fact.
Right.
Why is that true?
Why do people resist it?
Yeah.
I think we want God's blessing without his authority. Hope that makes sense. Like, we're all looking for his blessing. We want a blessing from a father like him that tells us, you know what, you're significant, you're secure, and you're loved. All of us want that. So we're all looking for that. And if we don't get it from him, we'll look for that from anything. We'll look for that significance. Like, how can I feel significant? How can I feel loved? How can I feel secure? And if I can't get it from him, we're all looking for it. But if you actually get it from him, you have to acknowledge that he's the king. So we want it both ways. And I think it's tragic, but I think that's it. Like, we want to think, no, I'm good. I don't know, but you're telling me I'm not. No, I am. Like, I want that blessing, and I'll give it to myself if I have to, instead of letting him give it to me, because it's hard to repent.
Do you think it's possible, you talked about Jonathan Nolan's Westworld and all that, which basically is this dystopian view of humanity and the saviors of the world will be robots, basically. Can you intellectually convince people that their self-righteousness is wrong, or do they have to realize it some other way?
I don't know. I'm trying with this book. But the thing about the guy in Westworld, he's not a believer, and he's just going, look, humanity is so messed up. We keep making the same mistakes over and over and over for centuries. Apparently, we're not going to learn any lessons. Like, he's looking at it from a non-believer standpoint going, and he even says there's something deeply wrong with us, all of us. That's the problem. So I'm like, yes.
You're right there. So you're on the road
totally.
To understanding the faith, yeah. Understanding the gospel, but there's a roadblock there.
Yeah. So maybe he doesn't understand how good Jesus is on the flip side, but I'm like, dude, read Jesus now through that lens and see if he's not confirming what you're saying and then offering himself as the solution to it, offering the hope through him and the way of life that is the kingdom life of blessing those who curse you, that forgiving those. Like, see if that's not resonant with your understanding of human nature now, because for him to admit that, I thought that's really cool.
You know, one of my favorite moments, and it's repeated itself too few times, but it has been there, is when I'm with a person who doesn't know Jesus, who really has a very negative view about Christianity and total and all that. One of my favorite moments is if I can spend a significant amount of time with that person, but after a while they say, oh, wow, I didn't know you were evangelical. I had no idea. That's a compliment to me. If I can love on somebody, but how do you keep that? Because my self-righteousness stops that. It's when I'm working real hard at it, I can do it. But when I let loose and lose sight of everything, it's very easy to slip back into your old ways. How do you stay out of the old ways?
I pray in the morning when I'm walking Cozy, the dog, and I ask God to help me be a blessing to people. If the focus is on other people, it's really healthy. Because you can get caught up in your own head. Now I'm being really humble here. I'm the most humble person on the block. I'm really doing the thing that they were talking about. Like, no, okay, stop that, because it's just immature thinking, and I do this too. But like, okay, let me think about other people. What can I do to add value to this person? Like, who can I pray for? Who am I struggling with that I need to pray for? Like, just to take my mind off of that whole immature, childish game of going back and forth about all that stuff. No, God loves me. Okay, who can I be a blessing to? That's so healthy.
And you say you start off by praying in the morning.
I do. It helps me kind of set the template for the day. And I've never been really good at prayer until like the last year or so. Last 2 years, I've gotten into that groove. And it's been really helpful. And I'm literally asking God, please let my words be a blessing to people today. Please. And that mindset is much more mature than me wrestling back and forth with whether I'm doing a good job or not. Like, you know what I mean?
So it's interesting. I like what you said, and when you look at, in Judaism, for example, there are countless rituals. And the rituals are there so that you are reminded on a daily basis throughout the day, to consider God, to look to God, to think of God. You wake up in the morning, you wrap your arms in the phylacteries, and you say your prayer, and then you tie them so tight you see the indentations for the next few hours. That's a reminder. In Islam, when they pray five times a day, it's five times a day we know you're going to be thinking about God. What can we do without becoming legalistic? That's the problem, is that when we get into those routines, all of a sudden the routine takes over, and oops, the routine becomes what you're after, not the reason for the routine.
Bingo. I think that's it. Like, why am I doing this? I want to grow. I really do. I think people become cartoons of themselves by the time they're really old. So you meet people who are like, she's the sweetest. Oh, my goodness, what a blessing she is. Oh, you know. And then there's the angry old person.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, if you don't watch that early on, you wind up miles. As time goes on, you're way off course. And you become a caricature of what you were. Well, I don't want to end up being an angry old person. I want to be at peace. I want to be somebody that people come to and feel like they can talk to and get wisdom from.
Wise sage is where you're heading.
Something like that. Yeah. I want a cool chair like this. I want people to come up.
And, we can work something out. Yeah.
That's what I want. So it's the wanting the thing. It's not the proving myself with prayer. It's like, I know this is how I'm going to get there. It's like shooting free throws in practice. It's not to be legalistic about, if I don't shoot 1,000 free throws, I'm a bad person. No. I want to shoot good in the game. I'm going to shoot well. I'm looking forward to, this is how we get different. I want to be different. I'm going to miss out on being different if I'm not connecting to God. That's the motive. I don't want to go back to being completely self-absorbed. I want to grow in this.
So we don't, it's not we do this because that's what we do.
No.
It's we do this because we love Jesus
There's something beautiful on the other side. That's why. I want to be a different person. It's not going to just happen, without engaging God in my life and letting him change me. And that's what disciplines are for. It's just like we would never expect somebody to qualify for the Olympics in swimming without practicing. They're not practicing because it makes them a good person. They're practicing because they want to be in the Olympics. They want to experience that. You don't get to experience that without change. And that's part of humility. Like, God changed me. So the legalistic stuff, you're totally right. We can fall into that. We don't want to do that. It's not to, God's not going to love you more or less. We know that. But I do want to change. So it's a more hopeful thing. It's a more loving thing. I hope that makes sense. I know the legalism thing can be a trap for people.
It makes perfect sense. Okay. And I have to wrap it up here. Let's thank Brand for being here today.
Again, thanks to Russell Silverglade, everybody at Hammock Street Church. That's the interview from there. Thank you for listening, too. We are honored. Let us say it again.
Yeah.
Really honored that you listen to our podcast. It means a lot to us wherever you are. And we know we've got people all over the place who listen. And it just feels like far-flung friends.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks for that.
This has been the Brant and Sherry Oddcast, sponsored by Fellowship Home Loans. To find out more about the radio show or to order Brant's new book, The Truth About Us, go to BrantHanson.com.